threat. We close them off, spring a leak up here. We got no place for the water to drain. I shrugged. Is everything that could be damaged up high? The guy started preparing for the worst back when the plane started flooding. We weren't weighed down with a lot of possessions. We're all right. We can hold out for a long time yet. We might want to beef up our fortifications a little, though. Do what you can. Longo and his brothers always saw a little more that could be done. Chapter 71. Mogaba counterattacked while the water was still just ankle deep and the rest of the city was just starting to panic. He used all his Taglians and encouraged cruel behavior. The slaughter was terrible. I may never discover the truth about the attack on the Nueng Bao. It has been said that the Taglian tribune Pao Subir misunderstood his orders. Others, like me, believe Mogaba was responsible. Maybe because he suspected the Nueng Bao of looting his stores. I know he knew some had been plundered. He found out right away because he sent soldiers down to see if any water was getting inside. By questioning a few Jaikuri prisoners, he discovered that no locals were crowing about snatching a ton of food. Two, somebody in my outfit might have shot off his mouth again. Whatever. Pao Sabir's cohort, with transfer replacements to bring it to full strength, attacked the Nueng Bao. The tribune can't testify. He died early. In fact, a lot of Taglians died during the attack. But reinforcements kept turning up, which is why I believe Mogaba engineered the massacre. I knew nothing about it at first. I had located no listening posts outside our perimeter. I had no way of making sure my people would be secure out there. And where we bordered the Nueng Bao community, there was no reason to doubt that we would receive ample warning. Tai Dai was, as always, nearby. I had gone to the top of an enfilading tower to stare at the nighted hills and brood. Would help ever come? Lately, no news at all came in from outside. Plenty of people wanted to leave. I could hear some of them out there now, willing to take their chances with the Shadow Master. Fickle folk. A little hunger and stress, and they forgot all about liberty.
What is that?
Tai Dai astonished me by asking a whole question. I was amazed. I looked where he pointed. Looks like a fire.
That is near Grandfather's house. I must go.
More curious than suspicious, I said,
I'll go with you.
He started to argue, shrugged, told me,
Do not suffer any spells. I can't care for you.
So the Nueng Bao knew about my blackouts and apparently suspected they were epileptic. Interesting. Tai Dai surely learned plenty just standing around with his ears flapping and his jaw tight shut. My guys hardly noticed him anymore. Nowhere was the water yet deeper than halfway to my knees. But it grabbed my feet when I tried to run. And Tai Dai was in a hurry. He was sure something was wrong. And he was correct. We ran through that alley where I had stumbled before and had plunged into hell. For a second I thought I had run from Dejigori into another nightmare. Taglian soldiers were dragging Nueng Bao women and children and old people out of the buildings and throwing them to soldiers in the street. Those soldiers hacked and slashed. Their faces were distorted with the horror of their actions, but they were out of control, far past the point where they could stop. The flicker of firelight made everything seem more hellish and surreal. I had seen this before. I had seen my own brothers this way, a few times back in the north. The blood smell takes control and kills the mind and deadens the soul, and there's nothing human left. Tide howled a tortured cry and flung himself toward the building the Key family occupied, sword wheeling overhead. The place showed no obvious signs of having been invaded. I followed him, my own blade bare, unsure why, though I thought fleetingly of the woman Sara. Probably my actions were as thoughtless as those of the Taglians. Taglians got in our way. Tide engaged in some sort of bobbing, weaving dance. Two soldiers fell, their throats spurting. I beat another around with my sword, leaving him a collection of bruises and a lesson about dueling a guy a foot taller and 50 pounds heavier. Then there were Taglians everywhere, most paying no attention to us. I didn't have much trouble defending myself. Those people were smaller and weaker, and had a much shorter reach. And what I managed by brute power, Tide accomplished through maneuver. Hardly anyone was interested in us by the time we reached the speaker's door. I had guessed wrong before. 5 or 6 Taglians had gotten inside. They just were not going to leave again. Not walking. Tide barked something in Yuan Bao. A voice replied. I took a wild swing at one last particularly stupid Taglian, spending the rest of the edge of my blade on his helmet. Then I shoved the door shut and barred it, and looked around for something to pile against it. Unfortunately, the keys were so poor, their best furniture consisted of ragged reed mats. A lamp's flame rose, then another and another. For the first time, I saw the entire room the keys occupied. I saw the mauled corpses of several invaders. They had become focused on exploiting the beautiful woman before they finished everyone else. Kigota was still mutilating the Taglian corpses. But not all the corpses were Taglian. Not even the majority were Taglian. Only a small percentage were Taglian. Sara was holding her children to her chest, but neither would ever know fear again. Sara's eyes were empty. Tide made a sound like a kitten's whimper. He threw himself onto a woman. The woman lay face downward upon 2 little ones she'd attempted to shield with her body. Her effort hadn't been in vain. The youngest, less than a year old, was crying. No Taglian seemed inclined to try the door. I dropped to my knees where I had sat talking to the speaker so often. It appeared he and Hong Tre had watched death arrive and had engaged it in their places of honor. The old man was stretched out with his head and shoulders in Hong Tre's lap, but his lower body remained almost as it had been when he was seated. His wife slumped forward over him. The racket outside picked up. Tide! Get your ass pulled together, man! What? The old woman was still breathing, making a raspy, bubbly sound. Gently, I lifted her. She was alive and even aware, her eyes unglazed. She seemed unsurprised to see me. She smiled. She managed to whisper despite the blood in her throat.
Don't waste time on me. Take Sara. Take the children.
Her wound was a sword thrust that had gone in outside her right breast and downward through her lung. At her age, it was a miracle she had lived this long. She smiled again, whispered,
"Be good to her, standard bearer."
"I will," I promised. not understanding what she meant. Hong Tray managed a wink and a wince of pain. She leaned forward onto Kidam again. The racket outside increased again.
Tai Dei! I leapt over the bodies, flung a foot that glanced off Tai Dei's behind. If you don't get your ass up and get organized, we're not going to help anybody!
I spotted a couple more kids cowering in the back. One of them had lighted the lamps. Other than Sara and her mother, no adults appeared to have survived.
Sara! I snapped. Get up!
I slapped her.
Round up those kids back there.
They were too terrified to trust me, even if they knew me. I was still an outsider. A little yelling was all Tai Dei and his sister needed. Their universe suddenly regained structure and direction, though they couldn't see it since. They just needed somebody to get them started. We found only one more living child and no more surviving adults.
Tai Dei, can you keep these kids together if we make a run for the alley?
The Taglians would cease to be a problem if we made it that far. In there, one man could hold off a horde till help arrived. He shook his head.
They are too frightened and too badly hurt.
I was afraid of that.
Then we'll carry them. Can you settle your mother down? She'll need to help.
Sara, take the baby.
I'll carry the girl. On my back. I want my hands free. Tell her to hang on tight, but to keep her hands out of my face. If she don't think she can do that, let me know now. We'll tie her wrists together.
Sara nodded. She was past her hysteria. She knelt beside Hong Tray, held the old woman for a moment, then removed her jade bracelet. With a deep sigh and evident reluctance, she slipped the bracelet onto her own left wrist. Then she turned to Kigota and began trying to calm her.
Tai Dei talked to the children, translating my instructions. I realized that Sara never spoke at all. Not even in a whisper. The girl I was going to carry was about 6 years old, and she didn't want to go.
Tie her on then, damn it!
I snapped. I had begun to shake. I didn't know how much longer I would retain full control.
We're running out of time!
Only the baby was unhurt. A boy of about 4 looked like he wouldn't make it. He for sure wouldn't if I didn't get him to One Eye in a hurry. Water splashed and a man shrieked right outside. A body slammed against the door, which creaked and gave a little. Sara swatted the girl to calm her, fitted her onto my back. I asked, "How about your mother?" Never mind. The troll was with us now. She had a 2-year-old of indeterminate sex riding her left hip and the business end of a broken spear clutched in her right hand. She was ready for Taglians. Getting ready actually took less time than it requires to tell it. Sara carried the baby. Tai Dei tied the wounded boy onto his back, kept his sword in hand. He and I went to the door. I peeked through cracks between the mutilated timbers. The Taglian soldier lurched past outside. I asked, "You first, or me? One to lead, one as rear guard."
"Me, from this day forward."
"What?"
"Back!" I snapped.
But he glimpsed the hurtling's shape at the same time. He slid to the right as I moved to the left of the doorway. We were out of the way when the door blew inward. We jumped at the intruder, recognized him barely in time.
Uncle Doge!
He was a lucky man. The weight of the children we carried had slowed us just enough to allow us time to see who had blown in.
Go, I told Tai Dei.
We did not need to hold a conference. Taide encountered a pair of Taglians immediately. I jumped out and drove one away. Kigota wobbled out behind us. She stuck the tip of her spearhead into the throat of the nearest Taglian. Then she settled the child more comfortably on her hip, turned on the other soldier. A white crow swooped past, laughing like a troop of monkeys. The surviving Taglian was not a foolish young man. He headed for the nearest gang of his countrymen.
Go, go!
I barked at Taide.
Gota, Sara, follow Taide. Uncle, where are you? We're gonna leave your ass here.
Uncle Doge stepped outside as the Taglian pointed us out to his comrades.
Take the child away, standard bearer. Ashwand will be your shield.
He put on an amazing display, though I glimpsed only a few furious moments. That funny little white man took on the whole mob of Taglians and killed 6 of them in about as many seconds. The rest took off. Then we splashed into the alley. We reached safety moments later. In minutes, one eye was working on the wounded children, albeit not cheerfully. And I was deploying some of the old crew, with Goblin, for a limited counterattack. Chapter 72. That night was the final watershed. There was never any pretense of friendship with Mogaba again. I had no doubts myself that he would have come after us if the mistaken attack on the Nyuang Bao had been a success. Fighting continued until the water got too deep. Despite insistence by One Eye and others that protecting the Nyuang Bao was not our mission, I did salvage a third of the pilgrims, about 600 people. The cost of the attack to Mogaba was bitter. The following morning, most of the remaining Taglians found themselves in positions where they had to commit for or against Mogaba. The Taglians who had been with us from the beginning stuck with us. So did those who had deserted to join us. More came over from Mogaba's side now, but not a tenth as many as I expected. Tell the truth, I was disappointed. But Mogaba could make a hell of a speech to the troops when he wanted.
"It's that old time curse again," Goblin told me. "Even now, they're more afraid of yesterday than they are of now."
And the water kept rising. I took the Nyuang Bao down into our warrens. Uncle Doge was amazed.
"We never suspected."
"Good. Then neither do our enemies, whose brilliance is eclipsed by yours." I brought the old crew inside, too. We packed people in as comfortably as we could. The warrens were quite spacious for 60 men. Adding 600 Nyuang Bao did cramp things some. We had to learn to recognize one another, too. My men had been trained to strike instantly at any unfamiliar face encountered underground. I went back outside after darkness fell. Taide and Uncle Doge dogged me. I assembled the Taglian officers who'd attached themselves to the old crew. I told them, "I believe that we've done all we can here. I believe it's time to begin evacuating everyone who wants to get out of this hellhole." I didn't know why, but I was convinced that not much work would be required to evade or outwit the Shadowlander pickets ashore. "I'll send one of my wizards to cover you." They didn't buy it. One captain wondered aloud if I intended to drive them into slavery so I could make it easier to feed my own men. I hadn't thought this through, hadn't considered possible difficulties. I'd forgotten that many of these men had attached themselves to us only because they believed that that was their best shot at staying alive. Never mind. If you guys want to stay and die with us, we'll be happy to have you. I was just trying to release you from your soldier's oaths, so you would have some chance. After dark, too, we let the Nguyen Bao men go back home to look for salvage and survivors and stores. They didn't find much. Mogaba's soldiers had been thorough in their own search, and the water had risen to cover everything. Mogaba's men, using makeshift boats and rafts, began attacking Jaikuri-occupied buildings one by one, harvesting stores forced out of hiding by the rising water. Mogaba had drowned his own supplies. Chapter 73. When I was sure nobody would notice, I pulled all my brothers inside. We bolted up and locked up and left Dejigori to its misery. We took the Nguyen Bao survivors with us. Excepting a few men, who kept watch from lookouts, accessible only from inside, we withdrew into the deepest, most hidden parts of the warrens, behind booby traps and secret doors and a web of confusion spells scattered by Goblin and One Eye, who left only the occasional flicker of a doppelganger to mark our passing. I started out sharing my quarters with 8 guests. After just a few hours, I told Uncle Doge, "Let's you and me take a walk." With all those Nguyen Bao down there, the air was stuffy and getting riper fast. Light was provided by candles, so scattered you could get lost trekking from one to the next. Uncle Doge was close to being spooked. "I hate it too," I told him. "It keeps me riding the edge of a scream. But we'll manage. We lived this way for years once.
No one can live like this. Not for long."
"The company did, though. It was a terrible place. It was called the Plain of Fear with good reason. It was filled with weird creatures, and every one of them would kill you in a blink. We were hunted constantly by armies led by wizards way worse than Shadow Spinner. But we gutted it out, and we came through it. Right here in these tunnels, you have 5 survivors who can tell you about it." The light was too bad to read him, though that was difficult in broad daylight. I told him, "I'm going to go crazy if all of you stay with me. I need room. Nobody can get around without stepping on somebody right now."
"I understand. But I do not know how to help."
"We have empty rooms. Taide and his baby can have one. You could. Sara could share one with her mother." He smiled.
"You are open and honest, but pay too little attention to Nguyen Bao ways. Many things happened the night you helped Taide rescue this family."
I snorted. "Some rescue.
You saved all who could be saved."
"What a good boy am I."
"You had neither an obligation nor any cause of honor."
In actuality, he used honor and obligation in lieu of Nguyen Bao concepts of similar but not identical meaning, which include overtones of free will participation in a divine machination.
"I did what seemed like the right thing. Indeed. Without any appeal or obligation, which caused your current predicament."
"I must be missing something."
"Because you're not Nguyen Bao. Taide will not leave you now. He is the oldest male. He owes you 6 lives. His baby will not leave him. Sara will not leave because she must remain under her brother's protection until she marries. And as you can see, she may be a while getting through the horror. In this city, upon this pilgrimage, she never wanted to make, she has lost everything that ever meant anything to her. Except her mother.
A man might almost think the gods had it in for her, I said, then hoped that didn't sound too much like a wisecrack.
One might. Standard Bearer, the only good thing she recalls about that Hell Night is you. She will cling to you the way a desperate swimmer will cling to a rock in a rushing stream.
It was time to be careful. A big part of me wished her clinging was more than metaphorical. How about Kigoda and those other kids?
The children can be adopted into the families of their mothers. Gota surely can move.
Dodge continued muttering under his breath, which was uncharacteristic. Sounded like something about wanting to move for a couple thousand miles.
Though she will not take it well. Don't tell me you're less than enchanted with Kigoda, too. No one is enchanted with that ill-tempered lizard.
And I once thought that you two were married. He stopped cold, stunned.
You're mad!
I changed my mind, didn't I?
Hong Tray, old witch! What hast thou wished upon me?
What?
Talking to myself, Standard Bearer. Engaging in the debate I cannot lose. That woman, Hong Tray, my mother's cousin, was a witch. She could see into the future sometimes. And if what she saw failed to please her, she wanted it changed. And she had some strange ideas about that.
I trust you know what you're talking about. He didn't get it.
Not entirely. The witch toyed with all our destinies, but never explained. Perhaps she was blind to her own fate.
I let myself be distracted. What will your people do now?
We will survive, Standard Bearer. Like you soldiers of darkness. That is what we do.
If you really think you owe me for stumbling in there with Tai Day, tell me what that means. Soldiers of darkness. Stone soldier. Bone warrior, what do they mean?
One might almost accept your protestations.
Look at it this way. If I do know what you're talking about, you have nothing to lose by telling me what I already know. In that light, it was hard to tell, but I believe Uncle Doge smiled again. For the second time in one day.
Clever, he said,
and did not explain a thing. Chapter 74. Uncle Doge relieved me of most of my guests. I ended up sharing quarters with Tai Day and his son Totan, plus Sara. Sara helped me with the baby and struggled to put together meals, though the company kitchen could serve everyone in the Warrens. She needed to stay busy. Tai Day followed me almost everywhere. Both he and Sara were lethargic and uncommunicative, and added up to about half a human being between them. I began to worry. They belonged to a hardy people accustomed to surviving cruel disasters. They should show some signs of recovery. I assembled the brains of the outfit. Cletus, Loftus, Longinus, Goblin and One-Eye, Otto and Haga. I got some questions, troops.
He gotta be here?
Goblin meant Tai Day. He's all right. Ignore him.
What kind of questions?
One-Eye demanded. So far we haven't had any major health problems in the company. But there's cholera and typhoid out there.
not to mention plenty of the old-fashioned drizzling shits. We all right? Goblin muttered something and passed gas loudly.
Barbarian, One Eye sneered. We're all right because we follow Croker's health rules like they was religious laws. Only we can't make the rules stick much longer. We're almost out of fuel. And these Nguyen Bao? They don't like to bother boiling water and keeping clean and not shitting where they live. We got them going along right now. But it ain't going to last.
It's been overcast and nasty for a few days, I hear. Are we collecting any rainwater?
Plenty for us, Loftus told me. But not enough for us and them, let alone getting any put back into the cisterns.
I was afraid of that. About the fuel, I mean.
You guys know any way to fix rice and beans so you can digest them without cooking them?
Nobody knew.
Longina suggested, maybe soaking them a long time in water might help. My mother did that.
Damn, I really want us to get through this. But how?
Goblin seemed to develop a small secret smile at that, like he had a definite idea. He exchanged glances with One Eye.
You guys got something?
Not yet, Goblin told me. There's an experiment we still have to try.
Get on with it.
After the meeting, we need you to help.
Wonderful.
All right. Can anyone tell me what the rest of the city thinks about our disappearance?
Hagop coughed, clearing his throat. He didn't say much ordinarily, so everybody paused to listen.
I've been doing watches in the lookouts. Sometimes you can hear talk. I don't think we've done our reputation any good. Also, I don't think we've fooled anybody. They don't talk about us much, but nobody figures we just cut out. They think we found some way to dig a hole and fill it up with wine, women, and food, and pulled it in after us, and we ain't coming back out again till the rest of them are good and dead.
Guys, I tried to get the wine, women, and banquets, but all I could come up with was the hole.
Out of nowhere, Otto said,
The water's going down.
What?
It is, Mergen. It's down 5 feet already.
Would flooding the city make that much difference? No, why is that?
Goblin and One Eye exchanged significant looks.
What?
I demanded.
After we do our experiment.
All right. The rest of you guys. You know the problems. Go see if there's anything we can do about them.
Chapter 75 Talk to me, I told the runt wizards.
Goblin said,
We think something was done to you when you were out there.
He jerked his head shoreward.
What? Get serious. We are. You were gone a long time. And you changed. How many disappearing spells have you had since you got back?
I gave it an honest think. Only one? Maybe.
When I was kidnapped. I don't remember anything about it. I'm sure they drugged me. I was drinking tea with the speaker. Then I was in that street where you found me.
I have no idea how I got there. I have vague recollections of smelling smoke and going out a door, which put me somewhere that I did not expect to be when I got to the other side. I vaguely remember thinking something about being in the House of Pain.
They tortured you.
They did. I still had the nicks and bruises to prove it. I had no idea what I might have been asked, if anything. I did suspect that Sindhu's pals were behind my abduction and the attempt on Mogaba. If so, their life sure took an unpleasant turn when the Black Company found them.
"We've been watching you," Goblin said. "And you have been behaving pretty strange sometimes. What we want to do is put you to sleep and see if we can't reach the part of you that was there when things happened."
"I don't get you."
"You don't have to. You just have to cooperate."
"You sure?"
"We're sure."
He didn't sound sure. I awakened on my own pallet, not refreshed. Someone was wiping my hot face with a cold, wet cloth. I opened my eyes. In the light of one tiny candle, Sara looked more lovely than ever. She looked better than imagination. She continued to wipe my face. I had another hangover-type headache. What had they done? I ought at least to get the enjoyment that came before the pain. Totan began to fuss. He slept in a basket of evil-smelling rags beneath my writing table. I reached over and took his hand. He stopped crying, content to have human contact. He didn't cry for his mother much anymore. I raised my other hand to take Sara's. She pushed it back gently. She never spoke. I never did hear her speak, not even to her own children. I looked around. Tide was gone. Anymore, it seemed, I had a better chance of shaking my shadow. Tide was there even in the dark. I started to sit up. Sara held me down with two fingers. I was too weak to do anything, and my head felt like it doubled in size just rising that foot. Sara offered me a hand-carved wooden cup filled with something that smelled so foul my eyes watered. Yuang Bao's swamp medicine. I drank. It tasted worse than it smelled. She continued to mop my face. I shivered and shook. The pain went away. I began to relax, to feel both energetic and positive. That was good stuff. Maybe they made it smell and taste bad so people wouldn't take it all the time. We stared at one another a long time, saying nothing but reaching a decision our conscious minds did not entirely recognize at the moment. Hong Tre drifted across my thoughts with a smile and an admonition. This time I managed to smile when I sat up. Unchallenged. "I have work to do." Sara shook her head. She fished under the table for Totan, dug him out of his basket. He was in desperate need of changing. Sara tugged my finger. "I haven't done this in 20 years. Not since I was a kid myself and had baby brothers and sisters and cousins to change." "Stop wiggling, you little turd. You ought to know the drill by now." Totan looked back at me with serious big eyes, not understanding my words but catching my tone. We got him cleaned up and clothed again, in rags that would have embarrassed a beggar. I told Sara, "I'll go kill somebody, get him something better to wear."
She laid a hand lightly on my forearm, restraining me.
That was a joke, hon. You hang around with me, you're going to hear some dark stuff. I don't mean it literally. I'm going to work now.
I moved into the passageway slowly, my legs watery. Sara followed, Totan straddling her left hip. We ran into Bucket right away, looking groggy as he headed for his own pallet. I asked, "You seen Goblin in one eye?"
"They went upstairs with their magic junk. To the big lookout."
"Thanks." Before we walked 5 feet, Bucket called,
"Longo tell you the water is coming up in the catacombs?"
I sighed and shook my head. Listened to the half-hearted rumble of my stomach. Wondered if anybody had found a way to get some food cooked. Wound my way through the maze to the ladders that would take me up to Goblin in One Eye. The light of day might do me good. If I had the strength to climb that far. I hadn't seen the sun for a long time. Chapter 76. I would not see the sun for a while longer. Sara handed Totan up through the trapdoor. He was asleep again. I guess you do sleep a lot when you're a baby starving to death. It was daytime, but a driving rain was falling. Hagop sat astride a chair, turned backwards, forearms on the chair's back, staring into the rain morosely. "How long has this been going on?" I asked.
"Day or three."
"We get any fresh water out of it?"
"About as much as we can, being as we're hiding out."
"What are those two doing?"
Goblin and One Eye were on the floor in the middle of the room, cross-legged, farthest from the moisture blowing inside. They didn't look up.
"Wizard stuff? Don't bother them. They'll bite your leg off."
One Eye grumbled.
"And somebody is gonna lose a set of ears if he don't stop yakking."
Hagop and I each spent one of our diminishing supply of single-finger salutes. One Eye didn't acknowledge the accolade. The lookout had a window facing each direction. I went to the biggest. This rain was not what we called a gully washer back home, but it was strong and steady. I could barely sense the vague loom of the surrounding hills. Nearer at hand, I could make out the surface of the water. It was down, despite the rain. It was a gray that spoke of sickness. I saw a Jaikuri raft out there, so loaded with people that it was awash. Men using shortboards as paddles labored carefully to drive it toward shore. I made the rounds of the other windows, studied the city. I was pleased to see our Taglians at their posts the way they had been taught.
"They've been doing it by the numbers," Hagop agreed. "And that gets them left alone."
"By Mogaba?"
"By everybody. The fighting is almost constant."
The streets and alleys were now canals. I saw bodies floating everywhere. The stench was overwhelming. The water level, though, was lower than I'd expected. I could see the citadel from the east window. There were Gnar up top there, ignoring the weather. They moved around the parapet, studying our part of town. Hagop noticed me watching them.
"They're worried about us. They think we might come sort them out sometime."
"Sure we will."
"They're superstitious about guys like Goblin and One Eye."
"Which shows you how dangerous a little ignorance can be."
"I heard that,"
One Eye grumbled.
He and Goblin could have been playing some obscure dice game for all I could tell. I liked it better when they conjured big lights that went around smashing things and burning them up. Destruction I can understand. Sara seemed tired of lugging Toton, so I took him. She offered a grateful smile. It lit up the lookout. One-Eye and Goblin paused to exchange glances amongst themselves and with Hagop.
"What are you guys doing?" I demanded.
"We found out we were right."
"Yeah? That might be a first."
"You were right about what?"
"About your head having been tampered with."
I shuddered to a sudden chill. That is not something anyone welcomes.
"Who did it?"
"How?"
"How, we haven't been able to figure out for sure. It might have been managed several ways."
"Who and what are more interesting anyway?"
"So give."
"Who was Lady? And what was knowledge of the fact that she is out there?"
"Excuse me?"
"It's a little hard to tell from here, especially when we got tourists and their girlfriends traipsing through the workplace, but it looks like Lady and the Taglians are in charge out there. Their camp is on the other side of the hills, up the north road. The southerners we see patrolling are auxiliaries who report back to Lady."
"Run through that again?" Goblin did so. I said, "You guys go ahead. I'm just going to sit over here in the corner and think." Chapter 77. Uncle Doge and Ty Day were back from wherever they'd gone. They scowled at Sara and me when we returned, but neither said a word. Hong Trey still had her hold on the keys. Tai Day took his son. The little guy brightened immediately. Uncle Doge told me, "My people are not mushroom standard bearer. They cannot endure this much longer. You stone soldiers have been generous to a fault, and have given no provocation. But even so, there will be trouble eventually. A wounded animal will strike out at even the most loving master."
"We'll be out of here sooner than I planned." I wasn't in a good mood. I wanted to drag Lady across my lap and paddle her.
"I've already given orders to start the process."
"You'll sound angry."
"I am angry.
Lady used me in a political game with Mogaba with never a thought for the company's welfare. She was no more real company than he was." Longo leaned in the doorway.
"You get the word about the catacombs flooding, Mergen?"
"Bucket told me."
"How soon is it going to be a problem?"
4 or 5 days. Maybe more, lest the leak gets a lot worse."
"We'll be gone. Your brothers and One-Eye are up in the big lookout. Go find out what's up." Longo shrugged and went, grumbling about the climb. I asked, "Who speaks for the Nguyen Bao now?"
"We have not yet chosen,"
Uncle Doge replied.
"Could you? Quickly?"
"A Taglian general named Lenore Bonharch. The guy who's in charge of the freed slaves and friendly Taglians in Jaikuri right now is going to come by. We'll need somebody from Nguyen Bao to join us in planning our evacuation." He started to say something. I rolled on. "It seems that the Shadow Master isn't a problem anymore. Only nobody bothered to tell us. Our own so-called friends have been jobbing us for political reasons.
We could leave any time. I don't know for how long now.
I put all the blame for our ignorance on Goblin and One Eye. You can blame a wizard for anything, and people will believe you. Sara tried to make a meal from what we had. I touched her hand as she passed. She smiled. I told her, "This should be the last time we'll need to do this." I hoped. I was wrong. Everything takes time. Lanore Bonhart followed me down into the Warrens. He was both amazed and appalled. He was high-caste Goonie. It was bad up top, but this squalor down below was beyond his imagination. We talked. Uncle Doge spoke for the Nguyen Bao. Bargains were struck, agreements agreed, plans quickly laid. Preparations began in earnest. Chapter 78. In the dark of night, in the rain, the Black Company stole forth, crossed a rickety makeshift bridge to stairs to the battlements, joined the Taglians of the Al-Kul Company. With Goblin at the point, we sneaked along the wall, seized the North Gate and Barbican from the Narn their Taglians. Goblin's sleep spell made that easy. Nobody got hurt. In our gang. Before the last body splashed into the water outside, Goblin and I and the company cadre headed back to grab the West Gate and its Barbican. With the gates in our hands, we could proceed unobserved by Mugaba's men. Loftus and his brothers got to work inside the central of the three towers between the gates. While the wall itself was stone, with a rubble fill, the towers were not solid. They had to be hollow to allow crossbowmen inside to pepper the wall faces with missiles. The boys got to work opening a hole to the outside from the floor nearest to the present water level. The Yuang Bao brought our remaining food stores to the surface. The women would use the last of the Taglian's fuel to cook for everyone. I wanted everybody to build strength. A lot of us were little more than stick figures now. When the sun rose next morning, the Nar atop the citadel saw nothing they had not seen the day before, except less rain. They got no signals from the north or west Barbicans, but didn't seem concerned.
"Aren't many crows around anymore,"
Goblin noted as daylight began to fade. "Maybe we ate them all." Night returned. Everybody went back to work. The hammering and pounding and the collapse of masonry into water had to be audible all over town, but nobody could see what we were doing, and nothing was evident when the sun rose, except that several derelict buildings were missing. The lake continued its slow fall. The weather continued damp. The rafts the carpenters were building floated outside against the wall. Everything capable of offering flotation went into their construction, even the occasional empty beer barrel. That afternoon, we acquired some useful lumber when Mugaba sent three rafts to the North Gate to find out why his signals weren't being answered. We could not keep the ambush from being seen from the citadel. Mugaba wasted no more men or materials. Loftus and his brothers said the best raft would be built long and thin so more people could paddle against less front-end water resistance. Working in 3 feet of water, the three brothers and a few skilled Taglians assembled one raft after another, each able to carry 10 or more adults. By using everything they could find, they built 41 craft. They guessed that fleet could carry 700 people, more than 500 of whom could be put ashore while the rest brought the rafts back, reloaded them, and got underway again before dawn. so about 1,200 could get away overnight. Enough to establish a modestly solid beachhead on what we didn't know for certain would be a friendly shore. Problem. The numbers we needed to move undetected were greater than I'd guessed. I had my 40 old crew, more than 600 Nguyen Bao, and a whole lot more Taglians, freed slaves, and Jaikuri volunteers than I'd thought. Lanore Bonharge wanted to move nearly 1,000 men into Pendence. There was no way to get everyone out in one night. "Here's what you do," One Eye said. "You only take one load across the first night. Draw lots for the spots. That way, we don't get people climbing over each other and nobody getting out in the panic. Figure the draw so a representative percentage goes from each group. Then nobody bitches. Dump the 500 and some with orders to build a camp. Have the rafts come back and tie up, then finish up with 2 trips next night." "The man's a genius," I said. "You or a goblin will have to go, just in case." "Shouldn't be necessary." "Why not?" "Things aren't that dangerous anymore." "Then we won't need to dig in. We can send the Nguyen Bao and dependents out first."
"That will go down great.
Women and children and old people?" "That'll work. I'll bet you. Include the Taglians' dependents. Hold up on the Jaikuri, though, or we'll have the whole damned city lining up. We figure how many that all is, then draw lots for the rest of the positions." It worked out that 30 Taglians, 5 Black Company guys, and 15 Nguyen Bao warriors could be sent with the first group. We would have 50 swords on the beach. Uncle Doge grumbled about the scheme, because for one night, he wouldn't be able to keep his whole tribe together.
"Clever, soldier of darkness."
We were back to that.
"You hold us warriors hostage.
You want to go, go. There are more of you than there are of us. Take the rafts." He scowled. His hand called. "It's one night, Unc. And 15 warriors will go with them. They'll be drawn by lot. So one of them might even be you." One Eye and Goblin didn't want to leave. "I'm not going over tonight," One Eye told me.
"Me too, neither,"
Goblin insisted. They had that weasel look they get when they're dealing off the bottom of the deck. Why not? They looked like they could use a straight man.
"It ain't safe out there,"
One Eye told me, after Goblin failed to convince me of his altruistic desire to protect the world by blunting Mugaba's wickedness.
"That bitch from Juniper, Lisa Dale Bowalk, she's laying for us out there."
"Who?" I heard no bells ringing.
"Lisa Bowalk, from Juniper.
Nasty little bitch.
Ran with Maran Shed. The corpse runner. Shifter took her as his apprentice after the company went on the run. She was there when we scragged Shifter. The old man let her get away. Well, she's out there prowling, waiting for a chance to get even. She's already tried a couple times."
"And you never bothered to tell me." A healthy dose of skepticism is in order any time One Eye waxes passionate on any subject.
"Wasn't no problem till now."
Why argue? The truth seemed evident. Those two had plunder stashed and didn't want to leave it unguarded. Nor did either want the other left with it alone.
I told them. Take your chances with the rest of us. Bonhart and Uncle Doge, Goblin and One-Eye, all glowered at me. I told them I shouldn't have to take a turn. One-Eye chuckled.
Maybe not, but you said we all have to take our chances.
I hadn't yet drawn. Trouble was, the outcome was not in doubt. There was only one stone left in the jar. 5 black pebbles had been allocated to the company, and only 4 had been drawn. Allocated to the company, and only 4 had been drawn. I would go to the mainland with the first wave. Why did my bitty buddies look so smug?
Pick your rock and pack your shit,
Goblin said. They wouldn't have rigged the draw, would they?
Nah, not those two.
Paragons of virtue they were. Anybody want to buy this? I held up the expected black pebble.
Stuff it, kid, One-Eye said. We'll manage without you. Again? What could go wrong in one day anyway?
With you guys in charge? It didn't seem right, me going ashore before the last black company brother was out of the city.
Just get your stuff together and go!
Goblin snapped again.
It'll be dark in an hour.
It was still drizzling. Darkness would come early, though not early enough to complete 2 crossings and get the rafts back unseen. Damn it. Sara was burdened down with odds and ends and 6 pounds of rice and beans. I carried a pack containing a Nguyen Bao tent, blankets, various clutter useful in the field, plus I had Totan perched on my hip. That kid was the least troublesome baby I ever saw. Tai Day had not drawn a blackstone. I meant to enjoy his absence. We climbed out of the warren, descended steps, crossed to the wall, climbed up, walked the battlements, descended inside the middle tower. And that was about as much exercise as I wanted. On my raft, we were all Nguyen Bao, except me and Red Rudy. The Nguyen Bao were patient about waiting their turns. The guys in the tower, operating by feeble lamplight, were patient, too. Morale was good.
Careful,
Cleet said as I stepped aboard. I accepted children as he started handing them across.
I picked you a good one, boss, but it'll lean over if you don't keep the weight balanced. Ma'am?
He helped Sara. She acknowledged his courtesy with a dazzling smile. Thanks, Cleet. See you tomorrow night.
Right. Round up some cattle and dancing girls.
I'll check around.
Kneel down. You gotta keep the center of gravity low so the damned thing don't tip.
I glanced around. We were ready to go. 6 Nguyen Bao men were aboard. They would paddle over. 5 would bring the raft back. Other than them, Rudy and I and 1 gimp Nguyen Bao, about 50, were the only adult males aboard. There were 15 or 16 kids and half as many women. We were crowded, but Nguyen Bao make a light load. I volunteered to help paddle, but the men on the job lost their capacity to understand Taglian. Rudy said,
If they want to be dicks and bust their nuts, no sweat off our asses.
You're right, but keep it down. We're doing a sneak here. It turned out the Nguyen Bao were skilled boatmen, which should have been no surprise considering their origins. They remained as quiet as falling feathers and made rapid headway. The rafts immediately ahead had Taglian paddlers who not only made a lot of noise, they were slow. With just a whispered word, my paddler swung right and began passing. It wasn't much of a sneak overall. Paddles splashed, people bumped, grunted, banged around, and occasionally managed to collide with other rafts. But those were noises that came off the water every night, and tonight, the drizzle was deadening some of the racket. And, of course, we were headed straight away from the city. The light inside the opened tower served as a navigational beacon. My paddlemen maybe didn't keep the best watch on the light. We drifted way offline and lost it altogether. Somebody hissed. Paddles stopped dipping. Even the murmur of the little ones stilled as mothers placed hands over their mouths or pulled lips to teats. I heard nothing. We waited. Sara rested her hand lightly upon my arm, sharing reassurance. Then I heard the clumsy paddling. Somebody was farther off course than we were. Only this raft was headed the other way. It was too early for that. The sounds grew louder. The other raft came abreast, so close that it seemed they had to see us despite the darkness and rain. A voice said something softly, just a few words edged with anger, in the language of Gaia's Lee. I had picked up maybe 20 words, none of which I recognized now. I didn't need to know words. I knew the voice. That was Mogaba. He hadn't been spotted leaving during the day. From the north and west Barbicans, it was possible to watch most of the lake surface, which meant that he'd been away at least since the previous night, which in turn would explain why there'd been no response to our capture of the Barbicans. What business could Mogaba possibly have over there? The Nar paddled on into darkness. We resumed our journey. I remained lost in thought till the raft ran aground and tossed me forward. Sara and I took up Toton and our burdens and marched ashore. The little guy was sleeping like his aunt's arms were a palace bed. In moments I discovered that my companions, although utterly ignorant of the Taglian language, expected me to be in charge on this side too. Uncle Doge's idea, no doubt, and, in effect, only till he arrived. Rudy, take charge of getting camp set. We had swung back into the general course of the fleet and had made landfall where others joined us in savoring the miracle of life outside Ejigore's walls. Hanging around in a rainstorm in the middle of the night didn't seem much of an improvement to me.
Let's go, people! We can't just stand here. Start putting up those shelters.
We had the tents the Nguyen Bao had carried on pilgrimage. We had blankets wrapped inside those same tents so they would stay dry. Somebody collect some brush and get some fires going. Maybe easier said than done in this weather. Babadou, take some men and set a perimeter. You, Joro? That your name, Sergeant? I was talking to one of the Taglian soldiers. Get patrols out. Come on, come on! We don't know that there aren't people over here who want to kill us. But it gets hard to care when you're cold and wet and tired. I was tired to the point of collapse, but I made myself an example. Sara followed and helped. While I barked at people, we took turns caring for the baby. I had visions of some major historical ass-kicker like Cromback the Terrible, ordering his hordes about while he had a smelly baby tucked into the crook of his arm. Toton was a good kid, but he always needed changing. Soon everyone was bustling industriously. Shelters went up, brush got cut, small fires took life and spawned others, until there were enough to heat water to cook rice. The water we gathered using some tents to collect rain to the pots. It was going to be difficult for any of us to get wetter than we were already. We even sent several small loads of brush over to the city on returning rafts. Our friends might get to do a little cooking, too. Chapter 79. We'd known so much misery for so long. That night became just another sad chore. And in time, there was poor shelter, bad food, and feeble warmth for all. But by then it was getting light, and the rain was just an occasional sprinkle. Sara and Totan and I crept into our tent and bundled up. For a while, I was almost happy. That Totan was remarkable. He was almost as quiet as Sara most of the time, though he could get a good fuss going when he wanted. He was content to sleep right then. For the first time in a week, his tummy was full. Mine too. I got 4 hours of perfectly wonderful sleep before disaster interrupted. First, it took the shape of Ki Gota. I hadn't seen Sara's mother since Uncle Doge cajoled her out of my quarters. I hadn't missed her either. Because I was asleep, I didn't witness the part where she ripped open the end of the tent. When I awoke, she was spitting and howling in a mix of Nguyen Bao and really bad Taglin. Sara was sitting up already, her mouth open and tears starting. Totan began to cry. Ki Gota was not immune to baby tears. The soul of a granny did lurk behind all the ill temper, way behind. She said something to the toddler, gently. Rudy hurried up.
You want I should throw this one back in the lake, Mergen?
What?
She crawled out of the water a while ago, claimed somebody tried to murder her, supposedly pushed her off the raft she was riding. Looks to me like maybe she asked for it.
She probably did. Sara looked at me in surprise, despite her tears. But I gotta be nice. She's almost family. Man, Rudy said. He walked off, shaking his head. Sara began gesturing exasperatedly at her mother. Totan stared at his granny, sucked his thumb. I caught a whiff. Go to Nana, I whispered. Show her how good you can walk. He didn't understand me, but she did, and held her arms out. Near as I could tell, Totan was the only person in the world who cared for Ki Gota. He toddled, and his granny forgot all about being wet and cold and cranky. Sara looked at me hard. I shrugged, grinned, mouthed, "He needs changing again." Rudy found me staring at the city. Fresh smoke hung over our part of town.
Babadoo just ambushed a patrol, Mergen.
Shit. When they don't report.
He said they knew we were here. They were sneaking up. That Swan character is with them.
One Eye was right then. Anybody get hurt?
Not yet.
Good, good. Did they get a look at the camp?
The Nguyen Bao had done a good job of camouflage, considering. You could tell where the camp was, but not its extent. I think they just saw the smoke. They were real surprised to get jumped, according to Babadoo.
They see him?
Yes.
Unfortunate. Maybe they didn't recognize him. I shrugged.
Some things can't be helped. I'll deal with them. Hang on.
I stomped over to Sara and her mother.
Hush!
I snapped when the old woman opened her mouth to start. We have trouble.
Who can speak for the Nguyen Bao? I didn't know who else to ask. These strange people did what I said when I told them, if that improved our situation, but they didn't talk. The old woman put the baby down and rose. She squinted. Her eyesight wasn't good.
Dam Dak! She barked.
A frail ancient turned. Despite his age, he was carrying a huge bundle of brushwood. Ki Gota beckoned imperiously. The oldster headed our way at a high-speed shuffle. I went to meet him.
Greetings, father. I am the one who dealt with the speaker.
I spoke both loudly and slowly.
I'm not deaf yet, boy.
He replied in Taglian better than mine.
And I know who you are.
Good, then I'll get to the point. The soldiers over here have found us. We don't know what their attitude toward your people might be. If they're in a bad temper, I can't help much. Your warriors have scouted. Can you disappear? He looked at me for a dozen seconds. I looked back. Sara came to stand beside me. Behind us, To-Tan giggled as he played with his grandmother. The old man shifted his look to Sara. For a moment he seemed to be staring into yesterday. He shivered. His expression grew more inscrutable.
We can.
Good. Do it while I'm with them. I jerked a thumb uphill. I'll get word to Doge. He'll find you. Tam Dak continued to stare coolly. Not inimically at all, just without comprehension. I wasn't behaving like a proper foreigner. Good luck. I returned to Rudy. Here's the deal. The Nguyen Bao need to take a powder. I'll go with Swan. I'll stall around when I get to his camp. You see that the Nguyen Bao get moved out. Then make this mess look like we were setting up for the guys coming over tonight. The old man overheard every word. I continued. As far as anybody around here goes, these people never existed.
But
do it. And let them have most of the food. We can sponge off Lady's gang, I hoped. Rudy looked at Sara. Everybody seemed to think that she was the key. He shrugged.
You're the boss. I guess I don't need to understand. How are you going to explain her?
I don't have to. I headed toward where Swan's patrol was surrounded. Sara came right along after pausing to grab up To-Tan.
Stay here, I told her.
She looked at me blankly, smitten by sudden deafness. I took a few steps, she matched them.
You need to stay with your own people.
A little smile teased her lips. She shook her head. Hong Tre was not the only witch in this family.
Ki Gota!
Boom.
You! Soldier of darkness! You have ruin! Now is not good enough for you? Cruel witch was my mother, but...
She became incomprehensible, but not the least bit quiet. I checked Tam Dak. He remained inscrutable. But I would have bet my shot at heaven. He wanted to laugh. Fuck this.
Rudy!
Find out what belongs to Sara and see that it stays in our tent. Come on, woman. Chapter 80. Holy shit. Swan murmured when I stepped out where he could see me.
No wonder you went back.
Hands off, pretty boy.
Hi, Nguyen Bao. If you're out there, go see Tam Dak. It's important. Taglians. See Rudy from the company.
I turned back to Swan. There. We're down to a few snipers. Just in case.
He stopped staring at Sara.
Sorry. You really stumbled into the sweet shit, didn't you?
He did have the courtesy to make his remarks in Forsberger.
Yeah, I did. What's going on? I wake up the other day, after my wizards did an experiment on me, and I find out that somebody has been inside my head, messing with my memories. I find out I'm back over there in Hell's Kitchen hunting rats and fighting cannibals when all the time my so-called friends are sitting around out here, not even letting me know the Shadow Master is dead.
Swan gave me a dumb look.
But you knew that, Mergen. You was over here when we killed the bastard. You was here for a week after that.
Killed him?
It began to dawn.
You didn't insist on going back?
She said you... No, I didn't. When I found myself headed that way, I thought I was escaping from Shadow Spinner. I really believed that I hadn't gotten to you people.
I think. It got more confused as I tried to figure it out.
Somebody called out something in Yuan Bao. My troops hadn't followed orders. Someone else in Taglian called, "Can you come up here, please, Mr. Mergen?"
I told Swan, "I don't know what's up. You better stand fast. These guys are real touchy.
I got nothing else to do with my life. I mean it. They're paranoid in a big way. If you'd spent the last several months in there, you'd understand."
I clambered up a steep slope to where one Taglian knelt in some scraggly brush with a Nguyen Bao about 15 years old. The boy pointed, eager to be the first to deliver bad news. Fresh smoke rose from Dejigore. From, near as I could tell, the North Barbican. It looked like there was fighting there. A mauve flash told me One Eye or Goblin was involved. Mogaba must be trying to recover the Barbican. I spied flickers around the West Gate, too.
Damned Mogaba.
Thanks, guys. Nothing we can do about it, though. I hoped One Eye and Goblin carved Mogaba a new poop chute. Get on back to camp, will you? There's stuff that's got to get done. Lady was gone. Blade was in charge and just sitting around collecting refugees from the city, keeping them from reporting back with news about Shadow Spinner. He admitted that.
That's what she wants done.
He seemed indifferent to Sarah, unlike every other man in camp.
She's lucky she's not here, I grumbled. I'd turn her over my knee.
Since there was nothing else going on, I sat around with him and Swan and Mather until it started to get dark. Somebody found a puppy for Totan to play with. When it got late, I said,
"We'd better get back to our people. They'll be getting nervous."
"No can do, buddy," Mather told me.
Blade agreed. She said no exceptions. The warmth went out of the air. I gave each one what I thought of as the Nguyen Bao look. Swan and Mather averted their eyes. Blade took it, but with a twitch. Sara seemed untroubled. I suppose after Dejigore, it was hard to imagine a turn for the worse. She even smiled. I assume the prison pen is where I left it. I remembered that part of my previous visit perfectly.
We will keep you more comfortably, Blade promised.
Mather volunteered. I'll show you where to bunk. We were far enough away not to overhear, Swan thought. He told Blade,
You look at her good. That's one spooky woman.
I glanced at Sara. I assumed she heard, too. But her expression told me nothing. If Blade answered Swan, he spoke more softly. I continued to study Sara, wondering what Swan had seen. Chapter 81 The tent was decent. It must have belonged to a middle-grade Shadowlander officer. We were not unhonored guests, and the tent came with a man assigned to make us comfortable and bring us our supper. Blade's troops were foraging successfully, it seemed. I ate better than I had for a long time.
What I want more than anything in the world, I told our man, whose name I never learned, is a bath.
Sara hit him with a smile guaranteed to melt armor plate. She was enthusiastic about that idea. I'm so filthy my fleas have lice, I said. Must have been a real ration of guilt going around at high levels. An hour later, several soldiers showed up humping a looted stone horse trough. With them came guys lugging buckets of hot water. I told Sara, we must have died and come back as princes. Our tent was big enough to contain the trough and water with room left over. Swan turned up.
What do you think of that, eh?
If I didn't have friends over there fighting and dying, I'd ask for a life sentence.
Take it easy, Mergen. It'll all work out.
I know that, Swan. I know that. But some of us aren't going to be happy how it does.
Yeah, well. Good night.
It was. Beginning with the bath, Sara made it clear her definition of our relationship was exactly what others feared or suspected. She astounded me with her ability to communicate without spoken words, amazed me that in the midst of such unrelenting hell, a flower of such beauty could bloom and defy the night. I slept longer and better than I had for months. Maybe some part of me just resigned and let go. Water in the face wakened me.
What?
I cracked an eyelid and popped upright. Sara sat up as I did.
Totan, what are you doing, kiddo?
The little guy was leaning over the edge of the horse trough, spanking the water. He looked at me and grinned, said something in Nguyen Bao baby talk that sounded like da-da.
What's going on?
Sara shrugged. Totan said da-da again and headed out of the tent. Things were happening outside. I grabbed my clothes, climbed in, stuck my head outside.
Holy shit. Where the freak did you guys come from?
Tai De and Uncle Doge were seated outside. Their swords lay across their laps, sheathed, thankfully. Gangs of Taglians were coming by to check them out. I guessed they hadn't been there long, nor had they asked permission to enter camp and assume their posts. Swan and Mather appeared.
Uncle Doge told me.
Only one group made it out again last night. The black men attacked. Many men were injured. Numerous rafts were damaged. But their soldiers did not want to fight, and many asked to join Bonarge.
Who the hell are these guys? Swan demanded. How did they get here?
The rest of the family. I expect they sneaked. They're good at that. Obviously, your perimeter ain't what it should be.
Blade shouted something from the distance.
Crap, Swan grumbled. Now what?
He jogged away. Mather considered Ty Day and Uncle Doge briefly, shrugged, followed Swan. Uncle Doge said something to Sara. She nodded. I guess he wanted to know if she was all right. Toton climbed around on his father.
Doge told me, "You did well, and more than you were obliged, standard bearer.
Our people are safely away, and these men know nothing about them."
"Yeah? Good. What about mine?"
"They would not come out. The wizards want to pursue their vendetta with Mugaba. They might come tonight."
Chapter 82. They did not come that night. Nor did they come the next, though they sent a lot of Taglians and Jaikuri out in place of the company. 2 mornings later, Mather finally let me in on what the excitement had been about when Blade interrupted our discussion over Uncle Doge and Ty Day. He told me, "Crocker will be here in an hour or two, Mergen. You might put in a good word."
"What?"
It was not an hour, and it was not just the old man. Crocker was traveling with the Prabhrindra Dra himself. He looked like he'd seen a lot of hard road. I moved toward him in fits and starts, unsure where we stood after all this time. He jumped down, said,
"It is me. I'm real."
"But I saw you die."
"No, you saw me get hit. I was still breathing when you cut out."
"Yeah? The shape you was in, there wasn't no way.
Shouldn't have been either. It's a long story. We can chew on it over a few beers sometime."
He waved. A soldier trotted up. Croker grabbed his spear, which was almost long enough to be a pike, shoved it at me.
"Here. You left this when you ran off to play Widowmaker."
I didn't believe it. Not at first. It was the lance for the standard.
"You really need to hug it?"
"It's really it?" I was almost sure it was lost.
Despite what I had told Mugaba,
you got no idea how guilty I felt. Although I did think I saw it that one time. "It's really you?"
I looked at him closely. Having seen what illusions One Eye and Goblin could conjure, I wasn't quite ready to accept the evidence of my own eyes.
"It's me. Really. Alive and in a mood to kick some ass. But that's not what I've got on my mind right now."
"Where's Lady?"
"Poor boy." Blade gave him the bad news. His paramour had left more than a week ago, headed north. They missed each other on the road. Swan and Mather were impressed by the presence of the prince, their supposed boss. Why was he out running around anyway? I noticed Croker had a hard stare for Sindhu, who'd stayed behind when Lady left. The old man snapped.
Quit making love to that damned thing, Mergen.
I need to catch up. I'm way out of touch. Will somebody take this damned butt cruncher?
A soldier grabbed his mount's reins.
Let's get out of the sun.
I want to hear your story, I said,
while it's fresh.
Going to put it into the annals? You've been keeping them up?
I tried, only I had to leave them in the city.
I didn't like that either.
One Eye could promise the moon about taking care of them, but would he deliver?
I'll look forward to reading the Book of Mergen.
If it's any good, you've got the job for life.
Swan said something about Lady planning to write a book of her own when she got time. Croker flung a stone at a crow. It was the first of those birds I'd spotted since the albino in the night. Maybe he brought it with him. I sketched some of what had been happening in Dejigore.
Guess it hasn't been fun for anybody. Seems Mogaba is the main problem. Better get right after him.
How many people are still over there?
My guess is him and the Gnar have 1,000 to 1,500 men. I don't know how many people I have. Some come out every night, but since I got elected prisoner here, I can't keep track. Goblin and One Eye and most of the company are still over there. I hoped Uncle Doge and Tai Day were using this distraction to get Totan and Sara and themselves on the road.
Why would they stay?
They don't want to leave. They say they want to wait till Lady gets all her powers back. They say something is out here waiting for them.
Powers back?
It's happening, Blade said.
Huh.
So what are they afraid of, Mergen? Shapeshifter's apprentice? That bitch from Juniper? She almost got One Eye once already.
How come I believed the little rat now, but hadn't when he'd told me?
I had a momentary vision of One Eye puffing through the night with fanged death closing in. It was as solid as actual memory.
I remember her. She was a real piece of work. Marin Shed should have taken care of her when he had the chance.
Evidently she wants to get even with us for doing Shifter. She may be locked into the Four Valaka shape, too. Which would really piss anybody off, I guess. But if you was to ask my personal opinion, I think she's only an excuse. They want to stay where they are because otherwise they might have to leave something behind.
Like what?
I shrugged. They're Goblin and One Eye. They've had months to pilfer and profiteer.
Tell me about Mogaba.
Now we got down to the grim stuff. Before the discussion ended, even Nasty Sindhu condemned the Gnar. I'll put an end to that. You want to take a message to Mogaba? I looked over my shoulder. He couldn't be asking the guy behind me. There was nobody there.
You shitting me?
Not unless it's an order. And maybe not then. Mogaba wants my head. Not to mention my heart and liver for breakfast. Crazy as he is right now, he might go after me with you standing right behind me.
I'll get somebody else.
Good idea.
I'll go.
Swan volunteered. Then him and Mather got into an argument about that. Evidently, Swan had something to prove to himself, and Cordy did not believe he needed to bother. Chapter 83.
My status in camp changed sharply. Suddenly, I never was a prisoner. Never had been unfree to do whatever served the common good. Only problem was, my tent was cold. All I had left of Sara and the Nguyen Bao was the jade amulet Sara had taken from Hong Tre before we had carried the children out of the killing place.
"You done yet?"
Croker demanded, finding me seated in front of my tent, working on the standard. I showed him what I was doing. "Good enough?"
"Perfect! You ready?"
"Ready as I'll ever get." I touched the jade amulet. "She pretty special." "Very special." "I want to hear all about her people." "Someday." We walked through the hills and down to the shore. A sizable boat was out on the lake already. Blade's soldiers had transported it over land after having failed to work it along the canal from the nearest river to the lake. Croker and I took up position on a prominent hummock. I displayed the standard. They would be able to see that from the city, even if they didn't recognize me and the old man. Mogaba wanted to know where the standard was. He could see for himself now. While the boat crossed over and returned, Croker and I speculated as to what made both Mogaba and Lady want to be in charge so badly. "Looks like Swan is getting results. Can you see what's going on?"
"Looks like somebody black getting into the boat."
That somebody turned out to be Sindawe. I told the old man, "This guy was always as right with us as having Mogaba for a boss would allow. Ochiba and Icy and some of the others weren't too bad either. But they wouldn't disobey orders." Sindawe stepped ashore. Croker saluted him. He responded uncertainly. Looked to me for a clue. I shrugged. He was on his own. I had no idea where this was headed. Sindawe made sure he was face to face with the real captain. Once he was satisfied, he suggested,
"Let us step out of sight and talk."
The old man made a small gesture that told me I should let them talk in complete privacy. They walked around behind the hummock and sat on a rock. They talked for a long time, voices never rising. Sindawe finally rose and walked back to the boat like a man borne down by an incredibly heavy burden.
"What's the story?" I asked Croker.
He looks like he suddenly added 20 years on top of the wear and tear of the siege.
"Years of the heart, Mergen. Feeling morally compelled to betray somebody who's been your best friend since childhood will do that to you."
"What?" He would say nothing more.
"We're going over there.
I'm going to meet Mogaba nose to nose." I thought of a pile of arguments against. I didn't bother. He wouldn't listen.
"Not me."
I shuddered. My spine was shivering to that chill they say happens when somebody walks over your grave. Croker looked at me hard. "I drove the butt of the standard into the earth vigorously, meaning, here I stand." He grunted, turned, and went down to the boat. The creature Sindhu snaked out of nowhere and joined the party. I wondered how much of Sindawe's and Croker's conversation he'd overheard. Not a word, probably. The old man would have used the Jewel City's dialect. Once the boat was well out onto the water, I sat down beside the standard, clung to the pole, and tried to figure out what made it impossible for me to go back over there. Chapter 84. I had suffered no big seizures for a while. I was not on guard anymore. This one began insidiously. like just losing focus and drifting into a lazy daydream. I stared at Dejigore, but no longer really saw it. Thought of the women who'd entered my life and the ancient one who'd left it. Already I missed Sara and so serious Totan. A white crow landed on the crossbar of the standard, cawed down at me. I paid no attention. I stood at the edge of a shimmering wheat field. A twisted, broken black stump rose 30 yards from me in the field center. Bickering crows surrounded it. The fairy towers of Overlook gleamed in the distance, days walk away. I recognized them for what they were, without understanding how I could know. Suddenly the crows rose up and wheeled around, flew that direction in an uncrow-like flock. One white crow stayed behind, circling. The stump shimmered darkly. A glamour faded away. A woman stood there. She looked very much like Lady, but was even more beautiful. She seemed to look right through me, or at and into me. She smiled wickedly, playfully, seductively, perhaps insanely. In a moment, the albino bird settled onto her shoulder.
You are impossible.
Her smile shattered into shards of laughter. Unless I was completely, inescapably mad, there was only one person this could be. And she died long before I ever joined the company. Soul Catcher. Croaker was there when she went down. Soul Catcher. That would explain a lot. That would illuminate 100 mysteries, but how could that be? A huge black beast that looked something like an ebony tiger padded past me from behind, went and settled on its haunches near the woman. There was nothing servile in its manner. I was frightened. If Soulcatcher was alive, and in this end of the world, and inclined to meddle, she could become the greatest terror around. She was more powerful than Long Shadow, Howler, or Lady. But, unless she'd changed since the old days, she preferred to use her talents in small ways. For spite, or her own amusement. She winked at me. Then she spun around and just seemed to disappear, leaving more laughter rippling in the air behind her. Her laughter became the mirth of the white crow. The four Valaka became bored with the show, went off into the distance. And I faded. Chapter 85. A crow cawed overhead. A hand shook my shoulder, not gently.
Are you all right, sir? Is there a problem?
What? I was seated on a stone step, clinging to the edge of a massive wooden door. An albino crow paced back and forth on the door's top edge. The man who held my shoulder tried to shoo the bird with his free hand and some pithy curses. He was huge and hairy. It was the middle of the night. What light there was came from a lantern the man had set upon the cobblestones. It set eyes glowing across the street, at a low level. For an instant I thought I saw something huge and cat-like slipping past. The man was one of the Shadar patrolmen the Liberator had employed to roam the streets after dark, maintaining order and keeping a watch for outsiders of dubious provenance. Laughter. came from the darkness across the way. The patrolman wasn't doing a good job. I was supposed to be one of the good guys here. She was one of the dubious strangers. I was in Taglios. I smelled the smoke. The lantern? No. The odor came from the stairwell behind me. I recalled dropping a lamp, recalled a confused cacophony of where's and when's. I'm all right. Just had a dizzy spell. Laughter from across the street. The Shadar glanced back, but otherwise seemed indifferent. He didn't want to believe my story. He wanted to find something wrong right here, right now. He didn't like foreigners, and us northerners were all madmen and drunks. But unfortunately, we were also very much in favor with the palace. I got up. I had to get moving. My mind was clearing. The truth was coming back. I had a desperate need to get to the old familiar entrance to the palace because I had to get to my apartment in a hurry. The moon suddenly splashed its light down into the street. It had to be past midnight. I saw the woman, watching from across the way. I started to say something to the Shadar, but a sharp whistle came from the distance, in the direction the monster had seemed to be moving. Another patrolman needed assistance. He said, "Take care, foreigner." He jogged away. I ran too, not pausing to take the elementary step of closing the sally door. I reached my customary entrance. Something was wrong. Cordy Mather's guards should have been on duty there. I was unarmed except for a belt knife. I drew it, pretending I was a fierce commando. There was no way Mather's gang would leave an entrance uncovered. You couldn't bribe those guys to screw up. I found the sentries in the guard room. They'd been strangled. No need to question the prisoner further now. But who was the target? The old man? Almost certainly. The Radisha? Probably. And anyone else important that they could get. I fought panic. Managed to keep from herring off blindly. Tide and Uncle Doge were up there anyway. I stripped the shirt off one dead guard, wrapped my throat. That should afford some protection against the strangler's scarf. Then I bounded upstairs like a mountain goat who was long out of practice. I reached my own floor so winded, I had to lean against the stairwell wall and strain to keep from puking. My legs were jelly. Alarms banged everywhere now. It was happening as I stood there. I got some wind back, left the stairwell for the corridor, and tripped over a dead man. He was filthy and undernourished.